Afghanistan appeals for aid after a devastating earthquake, but that's complicated with economic sanctions. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Will Bain, in for Victoria Craig. Thanks for starting your morning with us. The Taliban government in Afghanistan is appealing for more international support as the country struggles to cope with a deadly earthquake which hit the southeast of the country on Wednesday. More than 1,000 people are believed to have died and others are still buried under the rubble of their ruined homes. Dr. Mohammed Yahya Wahir is the medical director at Sharon Hospital in Paktika province, the epicentre of the disaster.
We cannot cope all the cases. It is a humanitarian crisis and we need humanitarian assistance. People will face many health problems. They do not have shelter, do not have food. Really, international community have to help these communities.
The Taliban said aid flights had arrived from Qatar and Iran, while neighbouring Pakistan had sent trucks carrying tents, food and medical supplies. But Abdul Kahar Balki, a spokesperson for the Foreign Ministry, says more help is needed.
The government, sadly, is under sanctions, so it is financially unable to assist the people to the extent that is needed. International relief agencies are helping. Neighboring countries have offered assistance, which we appreciate and welcome. The assistance needs to be scaled up to a very large extent.
Getting that aid, however, could prove challenging, as the BBC's Yogita Lamai explains.
Countries around the world have offered messages of support to Afghanistan, but there will be hesitation to extend financial assistance directly to the Taliban. Humanitarian agencies working on the ground have so far provided an important bridge for aid to be delivered to the country, given that the Taliban government has not been recognized internationally. The earthquake has hit at a time when the pause on foreign funds flowing into Afghanistan after the Taliban takeover have left its healthcare infrastructure in near collapse and have pushed almost everyone in the country into poverty.
That's the BBC's Yogita Lamai. As we head to the markets now, we haven't chatted gas for a couple of days, but some big news from Germany today as the country announced it's moving to the so-called alert level of its emergency gas plan. This has reduced Russian flows, exacerbate fears of a winter supply shortage. Asked whether the rationing of gas for German industry could be expected, the economy minister, Robert Habeck, told reporters, "Hopefully never," but he added, "Of course, I can't rule that out." One for us to keep watching here, I'm sure. Well, staying in Europe now, the European Union is today expected to formally approve Ukraine as a candidate for membership during a meeting in Brussels. With more, here's the BBC's Katja Adler.
It's a highly symbolic move. The road from candidacy to actual EU membership tends to be a long one. Ukraine has been told it needs to first tackle corruption and clean up its court system. But Lithuania's Prime Minister, Ingrida Šimonytė, told the BBC making Ukraine feel part of the European family right now was something Brussels was morally obliged to do.
I think Ukraine has paid for this candidacy status, unfortunately, by way of people's lives.
Also at their summit, EU leaders will discuss ongoing military and economic aids to Ukraine and how to get around Russia's blockade in the Black Sea.
The BBC's Katja Adler reporting from Brussels. To Paris now, where the French president Emmanuel Macron has called for political parties in the country's new parliament to come together to try and address the cost of living crisis. Speaking for the first time since his centrist party lost its majority in France's parliament at the weekend, President Macron said in a televised address to the nation he was still hopeful his ambitious economic reform plans could be achieved. But how realistic is that? Well, I asked Thomas Michalski. He's Associate Professor in Economics at the HEC Business School of Paris.
There were two main axes. One was the pension reform. The system needs a major overhaul in order not to go bust within 15 years. Number two was addressing and modernizing the state, given the arrival of new technologies, working from afar, digitization of various processes.
So now, given the makeup of the parliament, I guess that this all becomes even more difficult to try and untangle.
You're totally correct. The interesting thing about the pension reform is that that may go through the parliament for the very simple reason. The president's majority, the party Ensemble, has a natural ally on these and many other issues, which are the Les Républicains. It's the former center-right party of President Chirac and Sarkozy. So in parliament, these two parties have a majority and the retirement age reform may in fact be passed, although it is going to rise more rabble, strikes, and so on and so forth. Very likely.
And yet on the other side of it all, like most countries around the world, France struggling with a cost of living crisis, there's a lot in the agenda as well that Mr. Macron wants to get passed on that. I guess he's going to be looking to the other side of the parliamentary building.
That's correct. We have some measures that are proposed by Mr. Macron that try to kill two birds with one stone, both trying to limit inflation and increase purchasing power of households. This seems to be a discussion that is going to be very, very brutal from the very beginning.
Given everything you've said, is there any chance of them getting any of this done?
It all depends, unfortunately, on politics. If center and center right somehow reconstitutes itself, there may be some legislative successes. What's also in the cards, after a year, the president can dissolve the parliament, and that may be a risky but perhaps a necessary move.
Tomasz Miszalski, associate professor at the HEC School of Business in Paris. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much, sir.
And if you'd like to hear a little bit more about those reform plans, well, do check out our podcast. Just search for the Marketplace Morning Report wherever you get yours from. In London, I'm Will Bain with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's a speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.